It's on page 21 of your songbook. I'm looking at the first verse particularly today. We can say it together. Krishna kirtana gana nartana paro premamritam ponidhi dhira dhira jana priya priya karo nirmatsaro pujito shi chaitanya kripa baro bhuvi bhuvo Bharavahantarako Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghuyago Shri Jiva Gopalako. Just the first one. So I'll say the words and then please repeat. Krishna.
Krishna.
Of Krishna.
Krishna.
Utkirtana.
Utkirtana.
In the loud chanting.
Gana.
Gana. Singing. Nartana,
Nartana,
and dancing.
Dancing.
Parao,
Parao,
who are absorbed.
Prema
Amrita, of the nectar of love of God. Amba Niti, like oceans. Dhira Adhira Jana, to the gentle and the ruffians.
Priyao,
who are dear.
Priya
Karao,
who are all pleasing.
Nirmatsarao, who are non-envious.
Pujitao,
who are all worshipable.
Shri Chaitanya,
of Shri Chaitanya.
Kripa
Bharao, who are bearing the mercy.
Bhuvi,
in the world.
Bhuvaha,
of the world.
Bhara,
the burden.
Avahantarakao,
who remove.
Vande,
I offer my respectful obeisances.
Rupa,
under Srila Rupa Goswami.
Sanatana,
under Srila Sanatana Goswami.
Raghu
Yago,
unto the two Raghus.
That is,
Srila
Raghunath Das Goswami
and
Srila Raghunath Bhatta Goswami.
Shri
Jiva, unto Srila Jiva Goswami,
Gopalako,
and unto Srila Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Translation altogether. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Shri Rupa Goswami, Shri Sanatan Goswami, Shri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Shri Raghunath Das Goswami, Shri Jiva Goswami, and Shri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are always engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna and dancing. They are just like the ocean of love of God, and they are popular with both the gentle and the ruffians, because they are not envious of anyone. Whatever they do, they are all pleasing to everyone, and they are fully blessed by Lord Chaitanya. Thus they are engaged in missionary activities meant to deliver all the conditioned souls in the material universe. So we'll just go through this first section and have a little discussion about this, the importance of this description and glorification of the six Goswamis, who are described as engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna and dancing. Krishnot kirtana gana nartana paro. So, just discussion on this. How is it that this these elevated souls are engaged in chanting the holy names of Krishna and dancing? Where in Shastra, or how can you describe this through Shastra as being a bona fide activity? Shouldn't we meditate on Vedanta Sutra and meditate, become esoteric? Yes.
I don't remember it fully, but there is this verse in one of the Upanishads that says, Harer Nameva, Harer Nameva, Harer Nameva Kevalam. And then I don't remember the complete verse. Kalau
Look it up in your book.
Nastiyava. Yeah. Basically, the translation is, in this age of Kali, the holy name of Hari, the holy name of Hari, and the holy name of Hari is the only way to deliver the conditioned souls.
Correct. So make sure today you memorize that verse. Find it in there. Harinam, harinam, harinam eva kevalam. Kalo nastyeva 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 gatiranyata. So Brihat Nardiya Purana says that eva kevalam is very emphatic. Eva means certainly, kevalam means the only. Harinam eva kevalam. There's only one way in the age of Kali Yuga, and that is to chant the holy name. That's a good citation. Thank you very much. What else?
Satatang kirtiyanto mam yatantascha dridhavritaha namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasite. Krishna describes the activities of the Mahatmas who are guided by the divine potency of the Lord in this verse. He says they're always chanting his glories, they're worshipping him, they're with great determination, they're offering obeisances to him with love. Always, nitya yukta upasite. They're always engaged in those activities.
Very nice. Right from the Bhagavad Gita. Two excellent shlokas so far.
I don't remember it perfectly, but this one is from Srimad Bhagavatam. Evam vrata sapriya nam kirtya jatanu rago ritchit uche hasati ati rotiti rati gayati unmadvan nityati lokabhaya. So,
sounded like you got it perfectly to me. Give a description and what it means and where it comes from.
So, Sapriya Nam Kirtya is chanting the name of the beloved, that is, which is Krishna. So then the heart melts, and then the person hasati laughs, hasati ati roditi roti. So he laughs incessantly and cries, and then dances without any fear of public opinion.
And what's the context of the verse?
I think they are talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
It comes from the Srimad Bhagavatam. The verse comes from Kavi Yogendra, but it was later on given to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by his spiritual master, Srila Ishvara Puri. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken the name, had taken initiation from his spiritual master in Gaya. And after he began the process of chanting, he had a question for his spiritual master. He came back to him and he said that, I'm experiencing these symptoms. What kind of mantra have you given me? Because I'm laughing, I'm crying, I'm becoming oblivious to outsiders. So is this correct that all these things are happening? And what's in this mantra that you've given me? So his spiritual master then became very pleased. And it's mentioned there that spiritual master is not pleased with money or something like that, but to see the disciple become actually advanced in chanting the holy name of the Lord. And his Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master then gave this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, saying that it's the essence of all the, gives the essence of the meaning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one develops a relationship with the Lord. Evam vrata svapriya nama kirtya jatanurago jitachuta iter. And the heart melts. And then one becomes oblivious to outsiders, etc. That's the context. So it's considered by Srila Ishvara Puri to be the most essential verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's also very much applicable to this. How chanting and dancing and singing the holy name of the Lord is actually a bona fide and direct process of self-realization. Anything else? Other points? Yes?
I was thinking how we just read this last purport of the Brahma Samhita, and that it relates to this, that you know, it talks about, because the question was phrased, you know, why is this a bona fide process compared to, you know, studying the Vedanta? And it says, you know, that there may be all these different theories that are derived by different speculations from trying to understand Vedanta, in different ways. And there's some element of truth in the various theories, but this ultimate theory is the theory that's presented by Krishna at the conclusion of the Brahma Samhita, and also in the Bhagavad Gita, this Achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva understanding that he's the substance of everything, he's not different from everything because it all emanates from him, that the jivas emanate from him, and the jada, the achit, unconscious matter also is his energy, but that that in our community we should develop love for him by understanding him as the basis of everything in this way, and this should be passed on through our preceptional succession of the Brahma Gaudiya Madhva Sampradaya.
Mm. Thank you very much. Nice.
I have this verse from Sikshastika, the first verse, which says, Cheta Darpana Marjanam Bhavamaha Davagni Nirvapanam Sreha Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam Vidyavadhu Jeevanam Anandambudhi Vardhanam Pratipadam Purnamuta Swadhanam Sarvatma Snapanam Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So it's referring to Sri Krishna Sankirtana, which gives all the benefits listed in this verse.
Which are,
first of all, Cheta Darpana Marjanam. It cleanses the mirror of the heart. And then Bhamaha Davagni Nirvapanam. It puts down the blazing fire of material existence. Sreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. It means brings all good fortune, and it's just like the moon, Chandrika Vitaranam. Just like the moon, something like that.
It's the very specific thing, actually. The white lotus of good fortune. Mm-hmm. It opens during the nighttime. It's a very special kind of lotus flower. Normally, lotus flowers open during the daytime when the sun comes out and it's very hot, and at night they close. But this particular lotus is poetically being referred to as the lotus that opens at night when the moon comes out. And the moon is Lord Chaitanya. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Godadai Pushpamanto Chitroshando Tamonirao. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda have appeared like the sun and the moon. And then it's special benediction in Kali Yuga, because Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. But there's this benediction that even though Kali Yuga is nighttime, still the moon has arisen, and now there's good fortune in this age of Kali Yuga, because you can get everything just by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam.
Vidya Vadu Jeevanam. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge, something like that.
Yeah, there's also a poetical implication there that the name wife is used. Mm-hmm. So along with, just like, the husband's there, the wife is there. So then when you take to the process of chanting Hare Krishna, then automatically knowledge will come. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yashuvairagyam Jnanam Chayara Haitukam. By engaging directly in this process of chanting Hare Krishna, then naturally knowledge comes as a consort practically.
Anandambuti Vardhanam. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss. Pratipadam Purnamuta Swadhanam. And at every step, it enables us to fully taste the nectar for which we are always anxious. Sarvatma Snapanam. It bathes the soul in. Snapanam means. It bathes the soul.
For the soul. Mm-hmm. This is an important point. Sorry, that we're actually, when we chant Hare Krishna, we need to actually have that hunger that I need to bathe my soul, and we have to take full shelter of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in great humility and with some anticipation of meeting Krishna in his name and with some eagerness.
Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. All victory to the chanting of Sri Krishna's names.
And this, so it's victory. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. So you can attain all victory in this age of Kali Yuga just by chanting Hare Krishna. All the philosophical processes, all the kinds of yoga, all types of karma, everything is obtained by engaging in Sankirtan.
On the back of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a, on our Bhagavad Gitas, we have a quotation. I think it's Ralph Waldo Emerson, and he says, I was thinking of the Sarvatma Snapanam, that it's the bath of the soul. He says, in the morning I bathe my intellect in the stupendous, you know, teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, it's a very practical thing how we read this the other night in the Shriya Upanishad, where Srila Prabhupada says in his purport to mantra number 17 that we are to keep in constant contact. This is the words, the phraseology he used. We should keep in constant contact with the personal feature of the Absolute Truth. Keep in constant contact, and then all facilities are available through that process. And it's just a nice point you're making. If we take shelter, Krishna is available in his personal feature through the Bhagavad Gita. He speaks directly to Arjuna and to everyone else. And our intelligence, Krishna says in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is worshiping him by reading and studying this sacred dialogue. So when we read Bhagavad Gita and study it, look at it carefully, then we do bathe our intellect, and that gives us direction how to act properly in the world. We won't become bewildered. As Krishna says also in the 18th chapter, if you listen to my instruction and you take my help, then you won't be bewildered or misled. But if you don't listen to me, then you'll be lost. So the way to listen to Krishna is to read Bhagavad Gita and fortify our intelligence. It's a practical experience that if you read for a minimum of an hour a day from the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, just set yourself a diet. It's like you wouldn't skip a meal. You wouldn't not drink water or something like that, or you really feel it by the end of the day. When you dry fast and you don't drink water, you do feel it by the end of the day. Your whole chemistry changes in your body. So if you go a day without hearing and chanting, especially chanting Hare Krishna, because that's what we're talking about now, we have the great fortune by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy to have constant contact with the personal feature of the Absolute Truth by chanting Hare Krishna. And so if we take that carefully every day, then our intellect will be bathed, we'll feel nourished spiritually. And then also, it's important to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, because then our intelligence will be directed properly and we'll gain some new revelation every day. And it's important that we have that. Evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva jnanam mukta sanga sijayate. That when we gain these kinds of advantages, we become blissful. This blissfulness is the first sign of advancement in spiritual life, and it can be experienced every day. We should plan our schedule around getting at least one mustard seed of this happiness, this joyfulness that's available. Krishna is Karuna Sindhu, and we heard Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. There's a big ocean out there. In fact, it's raining this kind of nectar all the time. Why aren't I experiencing it? Because I'm closed off to it. This is the nature of conditional life, that I've closed myself off, I've hardened my heart, I've built a frame around it. Bhagavatam says, Tadashmasharam Hridayam Bhateyam, that the heart has become steel-framed and therefore I'm blocking out all the mercy. So I have to, at least once a day, take this nourishment where I try to get at least one drop of that nectar that's flowing down. And from that, evam prasanna manaso, the mind can become prasanna, happy and joyful, blissful. And then also, we become scientifically knowledgeable and convinced about the nature of the Absolute Truth. It's a realization. Bhagavat tattva vijnanam. Vijnan means very specifically knowledge. We have vishesha gyan. It means we know very particularly exactly how things are. And it's not theoretical, but it's experienced. And this, Kaviraj Goswami says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is how one moves forward in spiritual life with vigor. And he says that Siddhanta Bulya Chitanakara Alash Iha Hoite Krishna Lagi Sudrid Manash, that one shouldn't be lazy in trying to get this. Siddhanta Bulya Chitta Nakara Alash. Alash means to be lazy and to not try for it, but you should try for it, he says. You should discuss the Siddhanta. Prabhupada said, read my books thoroughly, threadbare. And in one place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter of the Adi Lila, he describes how the devotees are like scientists, like professors. They come together to discuss topics. You know, you see professors sometimes, they'll sit back in their chair and it's, and back and forth the theories come and they churn it over and over and over again. So similarly, Prabhupada says the serious devotees churn the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, looking at it from different angles of vision. Every time you do so in the association of devotees, you walk away with something. Just like the other night, I really felt it when we had our class on Wednesday night, when we discussed the Sri Shapanishad. There was such a nice rapport in the group, and there was an openness and discussion of the principle of constant contact with the personal feature of the Absolute Truth. It was palpable. The next day when I was chanting, or even on the way home, I felt blissful. And when I was chanting japa, I felt enthused to chant and meet the personal feature of the Absolute Truth through the Holy Name. I thought, it was foremost in my consciousness that he's there. And because of that, I had attention. I had the power of attention, which is a very powerful thing to have, the ability to pay attention. Otherwise, the mind conquers us. And I got that because of the association of the devotees and the discussion. So, Siddhanta Bulya Chitanakara Alash. If I'm not lazy about it, and I have this discussion of Siddhanta, thoroughly threadbare from different angles of seeing, there's a construction made that it's a platform on which I can actually stand in spiritual life. Iha hoite Krishna lage sudrid manash. Sudrid means then I become very determined. Manash, and my mind becomes fixed in what I'm supposed to do. This is nishta. There is a progression of spiritual life described by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Rupa Goswami. Adau shada tata sadasanga tabajana kriya tador narta nivriti satato nishta ruchi stata. And it's a good idea to fix our mind on the goal of moving ahead in this progression, which means in the beginning there's some little faith, maybe tender faith, but it leads us to want to associate with devotees and find out more about Krishna consciousness. That leads us to taking the regulated life of bhajana kriya, accepting initiation from a bona fide spiritual master and taking the vow to actually practice. And then we come to anartha nivritti, and there's two stages, anishta and nishta. And anishta bhajana kriya means that my practice is unsteady, and there are various symptoms of that, which mean that when I first start, I feel that I know everything, because after all, I've been admitted into the school. And just like a primary school Sanskrit child going into the study, he immediately goes out on the street corner and wants to defeat all his friends by knowing a couple Sunday rules and to show his learning. But actually, he doesn't know that much. And this is called early zeal that comes from learning something new. And then there's another symptom of anishta bhajana kriya, which means the difficulty in following vows. One day I follow, the next day I can't follow. I make a big decision, and then 2 weeks later, oh, how come you're not there? It's like, well, you know. These symptoms are listed. There are waves of material existence which can come. And even when one becomes more advanced in devotional service, then people can come forward and offer all kinds of accolades and gifts and things like that. And someone can become knocked off the process of devotional service, thinking like, oh, I've arrived. And then immediately you're finished. Your humility's gone. You can't chant with concentration or attention. So nishta comes actually when we remove these certain obstacles. There are five obstacles specifically to nishta that are just inherent in the conditioned soul. And the first one is called distraction. I'm just distracted. In fact, I saw a bumper sticker the other day that said, seek constant distraction. And that I thought about that, and that actually is the mode of material life. If you're not constantly distracted, I watch people when I'm sitting on an airplane sometimes, and everyone has to have some constant distraction. I saw a man next to me, he had an iPad, a Kindle, and an Apple Book Pro. So he had all those things, and he kept switching from one to the next. He had his Kindle, and then he had his iPad, and one thing next. Everyone kind of stays absorbed in something. Prabhupada pointed out even a drunkard stays absorbed in the process of being a drunkard. They do certain things, and they're good at it. They stay absorbed in the mode of ignorance. What's distraction? Distraction means there are nine direct processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma, Nivedanam. And in those direct processes of devotional service, by applying those, we're actually associating with Krishna. Very particularly talking about chanting, when we chant Hare Krishna, we have constant contact with the personal feature of the Absolute Truth. But I can become distracted from that. This is an obstacle to nishta, or being steady in devotional service, distraction. It's just there. So distraction is the first thing. Another thing is called enjoyment, material enjoyment. That when I'm doing some direct process of devotional service, if some kind of material enjoyment is available, when I'm anishta, when I'm not steady, then I drop the hearing and chanting, and I go off to have the enjoyment. That doesn't include taking prasadam, because prasadam is actually a direct process of devotional service. And we're protected like that. We can actually, in bhakti, we live a life which looks very much like the materialistic life. It looks like the life of a materialist. Bhakti more resembles material life than it does the life of a yogi or the life of a renunciate who gives up everything. You'd see in Rajadham, all the people have houses, they have families, they have tons of food, all kinds of milk sweets. They have cows, they're attached to it all too. Even when they met Krishna in Kurukshetra, and Krishna said, you know, well, let's be together. And they said, well, not here. We got all our stuff over there at Vraja. You know, so this process of bhakti actually more resembles material life. It means that the senses are fully engaged in all kinds of things that are related to Krishna. So this distraction and then enjoyment, it means in material enjoyment, it's something that's not related to Krishna. Ritertam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tadvidyadatmano mayam yatabhaso yatatamaha. In the original verses, four verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna told Brahma that anything that's not related to me, that's Maya. Because Maya and Krishna are inseparable. They're right there. And the second that you don't have Krishna, you have Maya. Just as Krishna is all-pervading, Maya is all-pervading. So when you're not in Krishna, you're in Maya. So the direct process of hearing and chanting and devotional service means you're with Krishna. Now, one of the stumbling blocks to that is material enjoyment. I'm addicted to something that's not related to Krishna. And that can derail my hearing and chanting. I go off for that, for the material enjoyment. Then there's bad habits. Bad habits means second nature habits that I'm just used to doing things in a certain way. There's the Rudra principle, which means anger. I'm overcome by anger. It's a bad habit to become angry at things and not to learn how to control anger and such. Bad habits can also include all kinds of mundane things that aren't related to Krishna. The Prabhupada used to give the example of smoking. It's the most useless activity on the planet. It's so harmful that if you go to this exhibit done by, I think, some Chinese people where they take human bodies, people have died, and they have them on display. They've preserved them. Have you seen this? There's a whole museum. Yeah, you can actually see every sinew fiber of the human body. They show the circulatory system, the heart, and all kinds of things. And I was looking at some pictures of this, and it's actually really interesting. You should go, and then you go, yeah, I'm really not my body. Then you look at, they have a couple of exhibits where the guy was a smoker. And the smoker, you can see his lungs are just black. This is a bad habit. And most bad habits, to one degree or another, are like that. They're harmful. They're not eternally beneficial. But I'm caught in a cycle, a whirlpool, and I can't get out. It's very difficult. So bad habits is also a stumbling block. Another stumbling block to nishta, or steadiness, is called indifference. When none of the others are present, and the last one is called sleep. Sleep means that I'm doing my bhajan, and then all of a sudden I'm overcome by sleep. I'm chanting, and I think, oh, go to sleep. It's sort of a way of ignoring Krishna. Like, this is too much. I can't do this. And then I just, rather than hear, I want to sleep. In fact, you can see this sometimes. If you know, the room's all cheery, everyone's happy, pull out a Bhagavatam, start reading. If people aren't inclined, then either they say, I just remembered, I got to go. Or or they fall asleep. This is a symptom of unsteady devotional service. And indifference means when none of these other things are present, including bad habits or distraction, that I'm still indifferent to the process of hearing and chanting. I'm just not interested. I'm indifferent. And this is a deep-rooted sort of weakness of heart that comes along. It's a kind of a contamination of material life. When all of those things are absent, one has obtained nishta. So it's highly recommended that one come to the stage of nishta, and it means that there's a hard-fought battle going through these different processes of practice. And you know, to do anything, if you want to be healthy, you got to have a health plan, right? If you want to be wealthy, you got to sit down and study the process of wealth. You don't just get wealthy. In fact, there's lots of people like Mike Tyson. He made, you know, $100 million, and he lost it all. He was in debt. How do you get $100 million and lose it all? Because he had no plan. One time he was pulled over by the police in his Rolls-Royce car, and he was so distraught with getting a traffic ticket that he gave the car to the policeman. He said, just keep it. I'm going home by foot. There's no care for things. So you have to have a plan, actually. If you want to be wealthy, you want to keep your wealth, you got to have a plan. If you want to attain nishta, you actually have to have a plan for it. You have to think, how will I overcome these obstacles? How will I organize my life in such a way that I'll be fortified, that I'll be in good association, that I have a time during the day when I can actually get this mercy of the holy name very specifically. I'm trying for it. I can't live willy-nilly and come to this point. And so my point is, in any practice, if you want to be healthy, you got to say, I'm going to walk around the block every day. And maybe that's all you can do the first day, is go around the block one time. Fine, but start there and then work your way up to Hans Priya's father's walking 9 miles a day or something now. And you see him bound in the door. He looks like an Olympic athlete now. Yeah, you know, a year ago, he didn't look like that. But now, just take a look at him when he comes in. He's walking 9 miles a day or something like 6 miles a day. And now he's healthy. He had a plan. He thought it up. He did it. Healthy. So if you want to have a healthy spiritual life and come to this position of nishta, you actually have to plan for it. You have to have a plan of attack and put yourself in such a situation that you can attain this. And if you can't, you got to get yourself a can plan. So that you can move ahead with this situation. So the six Goswamis, we've proved through Shastra and discussing from different angles, that they're always engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna and dancing. And this, as we proved, some of you weren't here when we discussed this, but we proved through Shastra that this is actually a Shastric direct process for attaining self-realization. And then we have the statement that they are just like an ocean of love of God, and they are popular both with the gentle and with the ruffians because they are not envious of anyone. So now let's have some discussion about that line, that they are like an ocean of love of God. What does that mean? And they are popular with both the gentle and the ruffians because they are not envious of anyone. Karunath Prabhu.
I really like the popular with both the gentle and the ruffians because normally the ruffians and the gentle, they don't get along with each other. You know, they're too, like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the demigods and the demons. You know, you always have, in literature, you have the preppies versus the, you know, greasers, or the, you know, the mods versus the rockers, or, you know, whatever, different groups. Some of them are attracted more to, you know, following authority and being goody-goody, and then some of them are more interested in, you know, pointing out that there's, you know, that there's no authenticity there. You're just, you know, you're it's all fake and plastic, and you should be, you know, connected to the earthy side of, you know, the dark side of life, or understand that, you know, I'm thinking of in music the. Anyway, just different. You can see this playing out throughout culture, throughout the world. There's these opposing elements: those who are the bad, the outlaws, and then those who are the people who follow the rules. And yet, the pure devotees are they don't belong to any camp. And yet, people from all camps they appreciate the good qualities because of the lack of envy there. That the different groups are fighting against each other, and one side is envying the other side, and they're you know locked in this duality struggle. You know, think of the bad qualities of the other side, but that the it reminds me in the Srimad Bhagavatam how the demons and the demigods are fighting, but Krishna is neutral. He appears to favor the demigods often because they accept his authority and they want him as their friend. But really, it's not just a morality, like a simple morality tale where that shows the, you know, the bad guys are bad and the good guys are good. Be on the side of the good guys. It's the Srimad Bhagavatam is deeper than that because it goes to the very root that, you know, beyond the three modes of nature that are always. Competing for supremacy, you know, there's this eternal pure nature which is completely free from any envy, enmity toward the bad qualities of the other side, or the so-called bad qualities of the other side. So that I really always liked that how the six Goswamis were popular with both the gentle and the ruffians because they weren't envious. That is because they're on the transcendental Brahma-Bhuta platform, just worshiping Krishna. They don't have anything they want to take from anyone. They're not competing with anyone. They're not part of the three modes of material nature. And then they can just be popular with everyone.
Really nice points. And this is a very important point. It's something to aspire for, to meditate on, this non-enviousness. Say more. Yes.
I was thinking about the diverse. I don't know where it comes, but
straight on.
Shima,
put it straight there.
Like it tells, Suhin Midra Udasin Madhyasa Des Bandhishi Sadhu Sabhisha Papashi Sambuddhi Udashi. So there, I'm not sure what is the context there, but it's like shows the qualities of a devotee that he is equal to Sadhushu and Papeshu, like both. And there are, I think, there are many references. One where
give the reference, the verse number. Surin Nusa. It's,
I think it's 12.
It's sixth chapter, no? No? Go ahead.
Is it third canto wherein the Lord Kapil gives the qualities of his.
No, this is Gita.
It's I think 12 chapters.
Sixth chapter. Could you find it, please? Not Vishta Savabandhishu. Yeah.
There is one verse like where it does.
Go ahead.
Satroche mitroche tathamana panyo sitoshan sukhdehoshu samasangar vidurjita. So satro and mitro, like both, like friends and enemy, their equanimity, the quality of equanimity of a devotee is may explain many places. And one that the humble sage with the virtue of knowledge, he sees everyone, brahmana, cow, dog, dog eater, elephant. What is that verse? So that quality of seeing everyone equally on the spiritual platform is good. Many places.
Okay. Thank you. Srivas and then Sri Babu.
In Bhagavad Gita also 9.1, it is one of the qualities of Arjuna is because he's not envious.
Mm.
That's why Lord Krishna says that I'm imparting this confidential knowledge because you are not envious.
This is a really good point. We've talked about this in this class before, that Voltaire had given a very interesting directive that if you are envious, if you're not envious of others, what he said was if you appreciate the good qualities in others, then you'll actually take those qualities on yourself. If you are envious, when you see somebody with a superior quality and you're envious of them, essentially you block your ability to absorb their good quality. But just the process of what Queen Kunti calls Srinvanti Gayanti Grinanti, which is a kind of acceptance or appreciation for what others are doing, how they're advancing in devotional service, what good qualities they have. This is a non-enviousness. If you appreciate, then you actually gain the quality yourself. It's miraculous in that way. So this is a very good point that Krishna points out. Arjuna is anasuyave. He's without this kind of envy. Krishna is going to say some really outlandish things. You know, for somebody who's envious, it's like, I'm the supreme personality of God. Everything comes from me. You know, if someone's envious, they're like, what are you talking about? You know, but Arjuna, his devotee, is non-envious. And so if you're envious of someone, then you can't hear from them. You can't actually get any knowledge from them. And therefore, tadvidi pranipatena priprashnena sevaya uparakshantite jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. You go to somebody who has knowledge, and you're humble, and you offer this pranipat, and you offer the service, which is really, there's different things, different motives for going to people. If you go to somebody because you want money or something like that, you know, it becomes obvious after a while. And they think, oh, he just wants money, here, take it. Like even Sanatana Goswami, when he had that touchstone, and some guy came to his bhajan kutir and said, here, go in the rubbish, take that thing, go. And after a while he thought, I must have not got some, there must have been something better. Because he came for the wrong thing. And then if you go to somebody just because you want their knowledge, because you want to also become known as a great scholar or something like that, that's what you'll get. But if you actually want to serve that person and you're non-envious, you're not trying to take anything from that person, really. There's a way in which you're trying to just, you're appreciating them fully, 100%. Then you actually become one with that person. You know, they feel your service. This is that meaning of this verse, tadvidi pratipatena. You know, if you actually go to somebody who's more advanced than you, who has knowledge, and you go in this mood that you're only there to appreciate, to glorify, to, you know, to serve them in a real open-hearted way, then you become like them. They just give you everything. And this is anasuyave in the first verse of this ninth chapter, Krishna is saying, because you're not envious, I'll give you everything. You just love me. You know, we're just friends, and you know, you don't have that envy that's blocking. Such an important point. Thank you. Srivas?
The reason I gave it to him was because that thread was going on. I just didn't want to break it because I just wanted to talk on the other second point you mentioned.
Yes.
They are the love. They are an ocean of love of Godhead.
Mm.
That's, I thought, was a very unique point, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the ocean of love of Godhead. And how come they got that ocean of love of Godhead? And we can understand that through Chaitanya Charitamrita that Srila Rupa Goswami composed a poem which is exactly mirroring the heart of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he asked Swarup Damodar that, how did he realize my heart?
Mm.
And then Swarup Damodar said, that's only because you must have bestowed your mercy upon him that he has realized the intimate nature of your heart. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, that's correct. So we can understand that the flow of mercy flows from the spiritual master to the disciple in a very unbroken fashion, and that is parampara. And if someone says that it only stops at a certain level of a spiritual master and it can't flow beyond that, that there's something wrong with the Shastras in itself. I mean, they are finding fault with the Shastra, because that's the Shastric principle, that it flows through an unbroken disciplic succession for anybody who's trying to follow it. So I thought, you know, they also had that ocean of love of Godhead. Though Mahaprabhu is the supreme absolute truth, he could still give them by his mercy that ocean, and they could freely distribute to their disciples and followers.
Nice point, how mercy flows down from one to the next. Thank you.
I was also thinking along the same line that and it continues to flow, and it continues on in the Guru Ashtakam, where in the very first verse it says, "Sansara dava nali liloko katana karana gana ganatman praptasya kalyana gunaravasya vande guru shigarnanda." So Guru is the ocean of mercy.
Hmm.
So each, and that applies to all the gurus in the disciplic succession, even your present gurus. Hmm. We make that prayers every day in the morning.
Hmm. Nice point. Thank you.
It's also, he's like a cloud. He's taking moisture from the ocean of mercy, and then he's dispensing it like rain that puts out the forest fire of samsara.
Nice. So there are described here, the Goswamis, like an ocean of love of God. And they are popular with both the gentle and ruffians because they're not envious of anyone. And also, this is applicable for our what we call our outreach, or, you know, and when we go out to preach to others, if we're not envious of them, they'll feel it. It's a repellent when you're envious. There's a subtlety there where people the soul's very subtle and can understand that what your motive is. And souls can perceive when you're not envious, what you're only trying to give. Something it comes out in your body language, gross and subtle, and there's a understanding there by living entities when you're not envious. It's you know, there are these unusual people. They're called like horse whisperers and dog whisperers, huh? Well, what it is and I've seen it myself. There are some people that are very connected with animals. Like some people grew up with horses, and it's just kind of in their whole family how to be with horses. And you could see other people will go and try to calm the horse down or train the horse, and the horse will just go crazy. But this other person will come up, and the horse will just come to them. I saw it in Vrindavan with a Sikh Krishna. He grew up around cows. And Karuna Sindhu, the cow that you all gave me a few years ago, is a bit of a wild woman. She throws her head and, you know, like that. So we wouldn't put her in a petting zoo anytime soon. And for some people, you know, but with the Sikh Krishna, he walks right up to her and he just stands, you know, stand right under her and start petting her legs and everything like that. And she's just completely calm. Uncanny. There's an uncanny thing that happens. And so there's people like that with horses. You know, they'll just go up and just say the right thing to the horse, and the horse listens. And then just, you know, for everyone else, the horse is running wild. But for that person, he'll just follow him wherever he goes. And I've seen it with dogs also. I knew somebody who it was just anywhere we'd go, And she would say, you know, she just talked to the dog, and the dogs just listened. There's subtlety there with the soul. So there's a way in which when people have a very unenvious heart, and when they circulate, people are like that too. They immediately become attracted. This is one of the meanings to the verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam given by Prithu Maharaj, where he says that when a pure devotee speaks, his words are mixed with saffron mercy particles. You see, the Lord's lotus feet are always decorated in beautiful ways. They have tulsi leaves and they have saffron sandalwood paste on them. And the poetical idea is that when the pure devotee speaks, his sound vibration is so in tune with the Lord's lotus feet that they actually the sound gets mixed. It touches that those saffron particles and they mix with the sound vibration. And then when we hear them, they have a special effect. And this is similar to this point I'm making, that there's a subtlety when the envy is gone from the heart. When we communicate to others, when we teach others about Krishna consciousness, then they're able to, then they're moved by it. Just like if you have determination because you're performing tapasya, you're actually performing tapasya, you're following the four regulative principles perfectly. And, you know, you're regulating yourself, you're getting up to chant and associate with the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through chanting his names with attention. And even though the mind twists and turns and wants to take you you know, all over the universe, you stick it out and you sit there. Okay, so then when that person sits down and starts talking about chanting the holy name and following the four regulative principles, is there something different in the sound vibration that comes from that person and someone else who's not following and just says that you should? Is there a difference in quality? They may say the exact same thing, but is there a difference? Do you perceive something different in the voice and in the demeanor and in the body language of the person who's actually cultivating determination through tapasya? What do you think? So this point about how they are popular, they're popular, actually popular with the general and the ruffians, it goes to this subtlety that if you're following, if you're experiencing, if you're actually non-envious, then you'll become popular with the general and the ruffians. People will be attracted to that.
It's interesting how we say, I remember once, a long time ago, I was on a boat with my father and I used the word enviousness in the way that we do in Krishna consciousness, and he found it unusual. That we usually think of, you know, when materialists, you know, the Republicans versus the Democrats, the Arabs versus Israelis, the, you know, the whatever different, you know, political dualities and groups there are, they, if you ask them, well, you're envying the other side, you know, they say, I don't want to be like them. I don't envy them. There's nothing they have that I want. I just despise them. I think they're wrong. And I, you know, but actually, there's some real wisdom in that we, you know, we say, no, whenever there's such as this duality, there's actually this kind of competition of between the modes that you're starting to adopt their qualities, their bad qualities, and they're starting to adopt your bad qualities. And, you know, but I wonder, how is it that we say that? Envy, can we further elaborate on that? That, you know, because most people would think, I don't envy them. I don't want to be like them. I'm glad that I'm not like them. In fact, I despise everything about them, and I would have nothing better than to have a world without my opponents.
Well, it's a kind of a related point, and that is that someone may be non-envious, and we heard verses from Sri Govindadatta like Vidya Vinaya Sampani, Brahmani Gavihastani, that certainly a person in that state of consciousness views everyone equally. But then there's a practical side to our life and existence. I mean, you know, a sadhu, a self-realized person, may see a young woman as a spirit soul, but it doesn't mean he goes and associates with her. Or a tiger, and doesn't mean that he goes and, you know, offers obeisances to the tiger and acts equally. Similarly, there are situations, this conversation came up in Govardhan a couple of years ago when we were at Havi's house, and we were discussing the point about envy being within the heart, and that if somebody's not envious, that there's a way of dealing with people equally. But then there was a devotee there who was a member of the GBC, Bir Krishna Goswami. And he was saying that, now let's talk about something else. He was saying that actually, you know, I'm in a management position. And there's a way in which I have to make distinctions, sometimes chastise somebody, you know, things like that. And somebody from a mundane point of view might say that, well, that's, you know, you're making distinctions, you're saying one's good, the other's bad. And how do you accommodate all those kinds of things? And how do you say something that appears to be harsh or discriminatory towards, you know, one person's philosophy or idea about how things are going to be conducted? How do you, in a community, we have a community here. Community is, there's a related word which means common in community. And it means that we have a common value in philosophy. And so then somebody else might have like a different idea. So then, you know, in the name of like, well, let's be non-envious and just say, it's all okay, you know, we'll be popular with the gentle and the right, or whatever. Let's just be popular with everyone. Everyone can do or say whatever they want. Well, how is it that someone could be non-envious and still seem sectarian at the same time? It's slightly related to what you're saying. And so there's administrative. I mean, Prabhupada with Mr. Nair, who was trying to ruin the whole purchase of the Bombay property, Juhu, which Prabhupada had promised Krishna, I'm going to put you here. And then, you know, the whole thing's going through, and Mr. Nair was, Mr. N, we'll call him, was a cheater. And, you know, he tried to derail the whole thing. Shruti Kirti tells how Prabhupada was getting his massage when the news came that Mr. Nair had died, and Prabhupada said, like, Jai! yes. Wait till the mic.
It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that a saintly person feels happy when a scorpion or a snake is killed, and it was seemed to be a little bit out of tune with the whole theme of Bhagavatam, that how can a saintly person be happy at such an event. And the fact is that the saintly persons, they think of the welfare of the people of the world in general, and if few people are trying to derail that whole process, then that causes them happiness when they see that obstacle is no longer present. Mm-hmm. So that's my take on that particular thing.
Hmm. Yes.
I had a question on this movie. Like, I heard that scorpion caught before also. So there is also one story where one saint was like picking up a scorpion, and then scorpion was like biting him, and it was like going into the water again. So then saint was again like trying to save it, the scorpion, from water. And then what person asked, why you are doing it again? So then he said that because the saint nature is that he's merciful. So although the scorpion is not leaving his nature of biting, but I'll also not leave my nature of like trying to rescue this. So how do we like accommodate both of them?
Well, as I said, when Bir Krishna Goswami was speaking, he was speaking up as a manager. And that, you know, there's practical ways in which a community is constructed. And, you know, we have examples of avadutas and those who are oblivious to the rules of the world and aren't bound to them in any way. Even Vasudev the leper, when the worms were falling from his body, he'd pick them back up again and put them back in. And then you could make the argument, okay, well, if you're a preacher and you need your body, why would you do that? Because, you know, if a disease comes, you try to get rid of it as quickly as possible, even at the expense of the mosquito who's biting you or something like that. You might get malaria and die, so you have to protect yourself. And in the Shishupanishad, in the verses, Yasmin Sarvani Bhutani Atmai Vad Bhujanataha, and the other one that goes with it, Prabhupada says we shouldn't imitate the position of somebody who's in that situation. We don't have to imitate.
Prabhuji, as I just wanted to also just to add to what you said, it also depends on one's own position before one takes an action. What a saintly man does or what one does in an advanced level cannot necessarily be imitated by one who is not on that level, as you pointed out. And so, for example, the Madhyamadhikari is supposed to be ignoring an envious person. But if he forgets that position and goes after that, saying that I have to deliver that envious person no matter what, then one is not acting according to one's own position of spiritual advancement.
That's a good point. And even those who are Uttamadhikaris who want to preach have to come down to that position. So as I was saying, somebody might be in the situation of being an avaduta and just, you know, they're not engaged with the world really. And therefore, they have the leisure of basically being non-discriminatory and they can be in that situation. If they were to come to preach, he might say, I don't want this to bite me again because I have to do my service.
This morning, the Bhagavatam verse that we're going to discuss this morning talks about equanimity, and especially as an important quality among administrative leaders. Because they're praising Parikshit Maharaj. And I was thinking before Sri Govinda Dutta was talking about the verse about how, you know, even more advanced than not wanting anything material and seeing pebbles, gold, and stone as the same is one who can tolerate, who sees with equal intelligence the friend, the enemy, the mediator, the neutral, and that equanimity of mind is important, and also how we deal as administrators dealing with difficulty and things is that we still have this Ishavasyam vision that, you know, there is a whole world and everybody has their right place. We'll see later when Parikshit Maharaj chastises Kali Yuga, when Kali Yuga actually surrenders to him, Parikshit Maharaj says, okay, then, you know, I accept that, you know, you have a right to live in certain places. So everybody has their... So this is a real example of equanimity of an administrative leader to understand that even those with bad qualities have their quota that they're allowed, and one should never take the quota of someone else.
Yeah, Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto... Did you have a point? Go ahead. After you, because you were first.
I think I remember you always make a point. You should act according to your adhikar.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the devotees who are like Six Goswami, they are gentle. They are popular through gentle and ruffians. And the question is like, what to our situation should be. So we should act according to our adhikar or, you know, our qualification. If we are on the level of Six Goswamis, then we will be able to protect with whatever gentleness and ruffians will come around us. And if you are not on that level, then we may get biased or we may get diverted. And I remember two Prabhupada pastimes, if I can. One is that... when Gurudas, Yamuna, and the three Grihasthas, when they were in England, they happened to live at many places, and because they had previous connections with Hell's Angels, so there was Hell's Angels gang there. So they stayed at their place, and Prabhupada video came by Yodhuvar Prabhu. So devotees, they said, we have to see this video. So they saw the video, and the Hell's Angels team was also behind, and they were also seeing, and they felt asleep because they couldn't appreciate that thing. And devotees were like so intently looking at it. But at the end, when, you know, Gurudas asked them, how did you like it and all that, then one person, he was a gang member, so he said, your guru is very heavy. He said that point, your guru is very heavy. And so this says that even Prabhupada was popular among the ruffians and the gentle. But how Prabhupada handled this is, once Prabhupada was doing kirtan, I think in San Francisco only, and one of the hippie girl came and she started dancing, and her dress was not proper. So Prabhupada was chanting and he had his eyes closed. And when he opened, he saw that girl. And then he somehow indicated like this. And Malati Devi and one more Mataji, they came to know that Prabhupada didn't like that. So they took the girl and they made her wear, you know, some pants or something. And then she came back and then she was dancing. And the Prabhupada again opened his eyes and then he saw her. No? And then Prabhupada somehow there confirmed that thing. So I feel that Prabhupada would allow that tendency to appreciate Krishna consciousness, but reject that would disturb the environment. In this way, he managed this thing. Though he was popular with them, but he didn't allow their disturbances.
It's a very good point and well put and supported. Thank you very much. Really expert.